Hey, what's your problem? You have business problems? We have business solutions.
Sometimes.
Well, maybe. Life is a fight.
It is.
In business, every day is a fight.
Constantly.
So, hey, what's your problem?
Yes, thank you. John David Wells of the Wells Report. The big voice guy for the What's Your Problem podcast. He's on Facebook. Just look up the Wells Report. Great guy. Sounds like Mike Rowe from Dirty Jobs, in my humble opinion. This is a podcast that originates from the Big Dot HQ here in Spring Hill, Tennessee. For anything lighting, electrical, and now heating and air, just go to big.inc.com. You should be able to find your way to any of our different services. Even the Octave light fixture, the color light fixture that's LED, that's taking the car wash industry by storm. We got a video on there that you can actually take a look at and see the entire Octave suite of colored lights. A lot of cool stuff going on. The What's Your Problem podcast is a show about Middle Tennessee business owners and professionals who, man, when you do this kind of stuff for everyday living, you kind of accept that there's always going to be something. And we talk about that something in general. This is a video and audio podcast, so pick your poison. Go to whatsyourproblempodcast.com. And I am your host, Jim McCarthy, with jimmccarthyvoiceovers.com. It's kind of weird. People ask me, why didn't you record your own intro? I'm like, that would just be weird. I did that on my last podcast called the JMVO Weekly Primer. And it was myself introducing myself. So JD Works, check him out again. I know I mentioned him. It's way too much. Today, we've got another BNI-er. And BNI, if you're not familiar with it, is a very strategic networking group. I call it hand-to-hand combat marketing. You want to get your business known out there and really start building relationships. It's a giver's gain type of mentality, meaning that if you keep on the lookout for other people and referrals for them, they typically reciprocate. Typically. And it's been around since 1984, I want to say. Gone international. Ivan Meisner's the big head honcho, or was at one point, and now he's kind of like a board member, I believe. But today, we've got another BNI member from the Williamson County chapter, Mr. Liam Schnell. Sir, welcome to the podcast, coming all the way out here from the Big Dot compound in Spring Hill.
Welcome. You're way down in the far south.
That's right. Bring that mic up a little bit more if you can. There we go. Yeah, point it towards your mouth. Yeah, there you go. This way we can hear you much better. And basically, Liam is with Goosehead Insurance, and we were just talking before the podcast got started about how the insurance industry is one of those industries that it's not exactly a sexy product to sell. You're not selling Benzes, you're not selling watches or pool tables or anything like that. It's insurance, and a lot of people kind of commoditize it in their minds, you know, similar to even the electrical business, like what we're in. They want to know what the best rate is, and will it get the job done? That's all I want to know. That just take care of my pain. Well, in the insurance game, it's mainly just making sure you're covered, and that will take care of my pain should, God forbid, something happen. But we kind of talked a little bit about that, and it's a tough grind, right? I mean, it's a long haul game.
It is. It's right. A long haul game. It's baby steps until the snowball builds.
That's right. So basically, you are, before we get going into that, I'm going to clear my throat as always. We have something called the Random Five, which is brought to you by Kalioka Company. Check those guys out. Links in the description. Liam, if you had a client who had a claim for smelly carpeting. I mean, it's not something you probably would typically cover or reimburse, but hey, they could inquire about it, right? But you might be able to refer a Kalioka Company, because they have a probiotic-based cleaner that goes after the smell. Those probiotics are really hungry for bad-smelling bacteria.
I think I need some of this, Kalioka. My wife and I just adopted a dog, and he's got a bad habit of marking inside the house if he sees something green.
Nice. Our dogs like to eat underwear. I mean, I don't know what is up with them. So, with that being said, let me go ahead and do this. The Random Five. This is five random questions, just so you know. I forgot to go over this with you before the podcast, but it's a little featurette that I do. 5 completely random questions. Here we go.
Let's roll.
Have you ever seen anyone pull the, quote, "Do you know who I am?" card? I have. I worked in radio.
I don't think I have. I've met a few celebrities here in Nashville, and shoot, it's the Nashville way to just pretend like they're not celebrities. Yeah. You just ignore them.
They're kind of like, it is what it is.
It is what it is.
Yeah, be cool, man.
I don't think I've ever encountered anyone give me the, "Don't you know who I am?"
Really?
No, I don't think so.
You know what they call the people who glom on to the celebrities? They see somebody and they're like, "Ooh, let me get over there and take a picture." Uh-huh. They call them GERMS. GHERMS. Yeah.
Why do they call them GERMS?
It's a real term. I don't know why, but that's what they call them. Huh. It's like, you know, if you see somebody kind of glomming onto a celebrity and have a slobbish adoration for them, they're being GERMing.
Now, Jim, are you a GERM for somebody?
Who would I be a GERM for? Let's make that that's a random question there. That just kind of came up organically. Who would I be a GERM for? I'd have to think about that. There are not many, because I worked in radio and I worked with a lot of different celebrities that came in and out, mm-hmm. and I wasn't all that impressed. They all, you know, put their pants on that's one leg at a time like the rest of us. They just make gold records. Who would I be? Who would you be a GERM for?
Oh, man. Probably Derek Jeter.
Really?
I love baseball, and I think if I got a chance to meet Derek, I don't think he could, like, push me away. I would just want to ask him all the questions.
Really?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I don't know. I'd have to think about that. You know, maybe Neil Peart when he was alive. Never got a chance to meet him.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie Van Halen, of course, when he was alive. That would have been cool.
Maybe Tom Petty.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I can't meet him anymore either.
Yeah.
But, you know. So, question number 3. We'll just mark that down as 2. The last thing you ate is now the only thing you can eat. How soon do you die?
Probably pretty soon.
What's the last thing you ate?
I had bean burritos for dinner last night.
Oh my gosh.
I don't think I'd last long on only bean burritos.
Yeah, you'd just rather die. Maybe some rice. Yeah. Question number 4. What is your favorite holiday?
Ooh, my favorite holiday is definitely Thanksgiving.
Oh yeah, I could see that.
I've got a big family on my mom's side, and Thanksgiving is the big holiday where everyone kind of gathers. Plus, my birthday is on Thanksgiving every several years, and it just...
Thanksgiving is one of those holidays. It's the speed bump to Christmas,
yeah.
Typically. But as we get older, we appreciate it more because of the food.
Sure.
And there's really no obligation around it, right? It's
unless
the start of the... Yeah, unless you're cooking and you got to do all that stuff. But that's more of a group effort.
Sure.
If you're really benevolent in your family and you want to help out. But, you know, there's no obligation. There's no kids to please and money to spend and all that stuff. Or, you know, copious amounts of money to spend.
Sure.
So I could see that. I would have to agree with you. I'm going to make that my new favorite holiday.
There you go.
Final question. Question number 5. What 2 things are you most passionate about? That would actually, that's a grammatically incorrect question. 2 things you can't be... Most passionate.
I can't be most about 2.
More passionate about. Mostly passionate about. I don't know. 2 things you're passionate about.
2 things I'm passionate about.
Yeah. I'm going to say 1 is baseball.
Right? Yes, 1 is absolutely baseball. I love baseball more than most things.
Uh-huh.
I'd say film.
Really?
I'm a big film nut, yeah.
Let's get into that. The Random 5, once again, brought to you by... Kalioka Company. Check those guys out. Links in the description. We're going to be right back with Liam Schnell and get into it with him and talk about his background as such and find out what his problem is.
Henry Ford once said that if you need a machine and don't buy it, then you will ultimately find that you have paid for it and don't have it. Nothing could be truer about energy-efficient LED lighting in your business. At Big Dot Lighting, we can show you how a portion of your savings from a commercial LED lighting upgrade will be paid for in hardly any time at all. Until then, you're paying for them anyway. Book a no-cost lighting energy assessment with Big Dot Lighting. At least 30% of your utility bill is waiting to be saved. Go to BigDotLighting.com.
All right, Liam, here we go, man. You got to get a drink there. Nice.
Little drink of water.
Little drink of water. So you said film is one of your passions. What kind of film? Is it a genre of film that you like the most?
I don't know that there's a genre I like the most. I am captivated by storytelling, right. And film has just been the medium that gets me.
Yeah.
I typically maybe avoid sad and emotional films, but whether you're telling me a good story or with action or with mystery, if you can tell me a good story, I'm in.
So is it film or more stories you're passionate about? You want to be told a good story.
I want to be told a good story.
Right.
I think film is probably the medium I choose most often.
Visual learner.
I'm a visual learner.
Are you?
Sure.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm not a big reader. I got to listen to the book.
I can read books as long as I can listen to them.
Right.
So I do some book reading in my car on the way to work, listen to books that way. I think last year I read, you know, quote unquote, read more books than I ever have in a year just because,
really?
Well, yeah, I was home with COVID. Well, I didn't have COVID, but I was home because of COVID.
Yeah. And all the work from home remotely stuff.
Mm-hmm. And I, you know, get Libby on your phone, which, you know, lets you rent audiobooks from the library for free.
Right.
I think I read 20 books last year.
Oh, wow. What kind of books?
I went. In school, I was a history minor, loved history. So any sort of historical fiction book, you got me captivated. Jim McCullough has got tons of, you know, early American history books that are just, you know, for me, captivating.
Mostly American history?
Yeah, probably mostly American history.
My wife and I have really been into World War II movies.
Okay.
And things of that nature for we just enjoy watching them.
So there's a new one out. It's a Tom Hanks film called Greyhound. Have you seen it?
I have not.
It's hard to find because I think it's only on Apple TV, right? And they're a little proprietary. You can't go just watch it on Netflix. But, I mean, shoot, any World War II film that's got Tom Hanks' name with it is going to be gold.
It should be.
I thought it was terrific.
I've been just cynical about the storytelling being told coming out of Hollywood and film lately, because it's just, they're reinventing stuff. They're running out of ideas, essentially. Except for one movie, we watched it last night. I want to say it's on Amazon Prime, and it's called The Tomorrow War. And it's got Chris Pratt in it.
Okay.
J.K. Holland? J.K. The guy who's from who's in Spider-Man and everything. He's
Simmons.
Simmons, that's right.
Yeah.
And a bunch of other different actors and actresses that are very, very good. But it was refreshing to watch because it was such a cool idea. It was fast-paced. It grabbed you from the get-go, and it held my attention. Dude, if I tune out within the first 5 minutes, I'm done.
You're toast.
Yep.
Okay, and this is on Prime?
It's on Prime. Heck, The Tomorrow War.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think it's an exclusive, but it's not, doesn't cost you any extra. You can just watch it.
Sure.
You know.
Okay.
I don't know if you can tell, I'm a huge Marvel fan, so yeah, looking around you. Those movies for me are fun because of the complex plot lines.
Sure.
If you're a fan of the band Dream Theater, which is prog metal, prog rock, similar, I like complicated stuff.
Okay.
In that genre for some reason. I don't know why.
I love the Marvel films.
Yeah.
My wife has begun to like them as well. We're actually in the process of trying to watch all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily chronologically. We debated, do you watch it chronologically or do you watch it in release order? We chose release order. And so I think we just watched Thor. So we're on the
first Thor?
The first Thor.
I just rewatched that the other night.
It's a great film.
We actually, in another podcast I produced with some of the guys here that work for Big Dot, it's called Capes and Hammers.
Okay.
It's an MCU, DCU, more so an MCU type of podcast where guys like me who are surface level, just kind of getting into it.
Sure.
It's a podcast for people like that who are just getting into it. And one of the guys it's on, his name is Gray, he's like the encyclopedia. He's grew up with the comics and everything, and he's like the Oscar character of the show that goes, actually, you know, and fills you in that, well, Thanos was actually in love with the goddess Death, and that's what he was after, was to impress her.
How does he feel about the Marvel Universe films? Does he think they're good for the Marvel Universe fandom, or do they just kind of Hollywoodize it?
I think he's okay with it. I never get the impression that he is not. And I think a lot of comic book people are okay with it because they have that multi-universal bent to them.
Sure.
So, you know, sure, in one universe, in the cinematic universe, it could play out this way. But in the comic books, actually, it played out this way. You know, so you have, and now they're actually on the Disney Plus today. Mm-hmm. What If is debuting. That's really going to be interesting.
I haven't heard too much about it yet.
Yeah. It's basically going back over the storylines and saying, okay, what if Tony Stark was rescued by Killmonger? Killmonger. And from Black Panther. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all these little, what if this happened? What if Peggy Carter had the super soldier serum put in her versus Steve Rogers? That kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It is.
Are they using... Is it animated or is it? Mm-hmm.
It's somewhat animated.
Okay. Are they getting a lot of the same actors for voice?
I want to say yes.
Ooh, that's good.
I think so. I'm not exactly sure. I could be wrong. But okay. One of the things that came up, we were talking about Thor and you just watching it, it's fresh on your mind. The enchantment that Odin speaks to Mjolnir, mm-hmm. the hammer, right? He says a lot of things, was anybody worthy to pick up the hammer prior to that enchantment? We talk about stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Because that's the first time that he speaks that enchantment, that only people worthy can have the powers of Thor.
So you're asking before he makes that, who could pick it up?
Could anybody pick it up and have command over Mjolnir up until that point?
I mean, you would like to think that Odin could, if he can...
Odin could.
Control.
He was the one who picked it up. Sure. He could pick it up. He had command over it. But yeah, that's the kind of geeky stuff we talk about, you know.
Nerds.
We're total nerds. So getting into it, you went to Lipscomb.
Yes, I did.
I don't know if we revealed that on this podcast, but we talked about it before going on. Getting out of college, how did you get to where you are now? What was the story and what inspired you?
Oh, man. That's a long trip. So I went to school for marketing and PR, and they don't tell you that when you sign up, but marketing PR is a tough game to get into, and you don't make all that much.
Right.
And I needed a job that could pay the rent, and that kind of led me into trying a few different things, and that's kind of how I found insurance was someone sold me, right?
Right.
You buy into the, if I, you know, fight really hard for this year and the next year, insurance is all about, you build a snowball because clients that stay with you, that residual income starts to build something.
Right.
And when you kind of give up on the career path that you went to school for, you know, all of a sudden your skill set doesn't necessarily lend itself to a whole new career.
Right.
But
it could.
It could. Yeah. And a career in sales, you can have a lot of different backgrounds.
Yeah.
And still find a really great career in sales. And insurance is just the one that happened to grab me at the right time and bring me in.
Did they talk about in Lipscomb, you know, personal branding and things of that nature? When did you graduate from and get your degree?
I graduated in 13.
Okay.
So not quite 10 years ago.
Right.
And yeah, they talked about personal branding. But in 2013, social media wasn't the game it is now.
It was still in diapers.
It was in diapers.
It was scooting along the couch.
The idea of an influencer, no one had ever really thought of what an influencer was or could be at that point. And so
the only people who were really doing that were on YouTube. There were people on YouTube that built themselves massive audience.
I think YouTube was probably the cutting edge of what social media influencers are today.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, Facebook was still like new and fresh, and it wasn't quite so polarizing at the time. And it was really a big focus because Facebook marketing let businesses talk directly to people.
Wait, you think Facebook is polarizing?
Yeah.
I don't get what you mean. What are you talking about?
Oh, man. You haven't been on Facebook then.
No, I try not to be on as much as I am for that reason.
Sure.
But, you're absolutely right. First thing, I always kind of thought about personal branding because my background has always been radio, which in that business, I learned a lot about marketing. first marketing book I read was The 22 Immutable Laws of Marketing. And I actually just bought a copy of it here and gave it to that guy, Gray, I was telling you about. He and I had a marketing conversation the other day about categories and holding positions in categories and stuff. So I ended up buying that book for him. And it really kind of turned me on to the whole concept and the philosophies behind it and of, you know, what you believe and how to do that kind of thing. And that, you know, opened up other possibilities to other realms. Like there's a book called Pendulum that I bring up a lot that talks about the attitudes of culture and how it swings back and forth between a me-focused culture to a we-focused culture, which is what we're going through now.
Sure.
And the next 5 to 7 years, it's going to be pretty dark and ugly, but we'll pull out of it.
Interesting.
That's why we're going through. That's why it feels the way it feels right now.
We're in a me culture right now.
We're
in a we culture right now.
It's going to be, they say in the book that 2023 will look like 1943 all over again.
Really?
Yeah. It's fascinating. And it's, the book was written in, I want to say 07 maybe.
Okay.
And it's based off of other books prior to that called Generations. There's one book called Generations that talks about four sects of 20-year time periods that society goes through. It just cycles through that. And they said, well, actually, it's a pendulum that swings back and forth. And the last time we went through a zenith of the pendulum swing was 1983, was the zenith of a me.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And that's so we've been on a we swing since.
Upswing. So since 2003, we've been on a 20-year upswing to a zenith of a we, which is all about community. But on either sides of those zeniths are extremes. So what starts out as a good thing at the tipping point in the middle, going from either side, feels fresh, feels new, feels like something that, hey, humanity still has a virtue. We're still good here. Once we get to those extremes, it's where we take a good thing too far. So look around you.
I need to read this book.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. It's a good listen.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's actually it's actually based off of marketing. The guys were in an ad agency and they discovered, hey, what we were saying for our clients last year is no longer working this year.
Interesting.
What's going on? What's making people tick?
My wife with a psychology background would absolutely eat this up.
I agree. And it's actually something for you to, I mean, I always recommend these guys. If you're able to get down to Austin, Texas, it's called the Wizard Academy.
Okay.
And they call it a 21st century business school. And they talk about some cerebral heady things, man. It's real.
Way up there.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, how to write ad copy and think about your business and how to put a voice to it and everything, which is, you know, kind of what you're looking to do.
It's catnip for you. I love that stuff.
So marketing, so getting out of Lipscomb, not giving up on what you learned. I mean, it's something you've learned. You can take it with you.
Right? You got to be adaptable.
Yeah.
I gave up. I sent maybe on the marketing career, but still taking a lot of the marketing education.
For what you do now.
Absolutely.
And you get paid better for it. Eventually.
Eventually, I'll definitely be paid better for it.
So you had out of necessity to get a job. You were sold insurance. You piqued your interest. How long ago was that?
So after I graduated, I kind of bounced around jobs and I ended up taking a job at an engineering company. In Nashville, Google Fiber was going to be the next greatest thing. I don't know. 6 or 7 years ago.
Right.
And they were hiring that we just need bodies.
Right?
Yeah. And it ended up being a good job for me for about 4 or 5 years. And right at the end there, that's kind of how I got introduced to insurance. And that's where I started making that shift. So I would say somewhere around the beginning of 2019 was when that shift over to insurance started.
So you knowing going from what you were doing in the engineering firm and building up that resume,
sure,
jumping out, you're starting all over again.
You in the engineering firm, there's only so far you can go without a degree.
Yeah.
There's a lot of forms.
Engineering degree.
Yeah. Without an engineering degree, there's only so far you can go because they need you to be able to sign off on some things. And without a degree, without the proper, you know, licensing, you can only go so far. So even though I was good at the job, you know, I probably made it farther than I should have without an engineering degree. You know, it was essentially turning into a dead end job just because without the degree, without the proper licensing.
Right. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was good. I'm very left brained.
Right.
and you need to be fairly right brain for engineering.
Is that the creative right brain?
Maybe I've confused them. Is right brain creative or is right brain
I don't remember
analytical? Whichever one it is, you need to be very analytical and driven for engineering. And if you're a little bit more artistic and you like stories and you don't really want to do the exact same thing every single day,
right?
You know, and kind of eat you up a little bit.
Yeah, there's I guess an even mix of both. I was sure creative more so in earlier parts of my career, especially in radio.
Sure.
But you know, sometime during this point you met the love of your life, and forgive, it's a Lisa.
Leah.
I knew it was either one of the two.
No, you're fine. So I, you know, Liam, L-I-A-M.
Yeah.
Oh, and oh my you just gosh. Drop the M off and you have Leah.
And Leah, and Liam.
I think that probably delayed us dating by 2 weeks because she'll tell anyone who will listen, oh, our names are too similar. I can't date him.
Did you meet her from work?
No, actually, I met her at a Halloween party that my sister had invited her to.
Nice. And so basically, how did that kind of work? You're like, hey, what was she dressed as?
She had an it was a Halloween party, right? She had an orange dress on. It wasn't a costume party.
Hey.
And it was pretty quick. I kind of had, you know, some friends there. I'm just going, who is that?
Yeah. Hey, she's that orange dress has caught my attention.
Oh, yeah.
She came into the room and everything went hush.
Well, for me, it did.
Sure. Yeah, for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was the opening line? Being in a marketing role.
How we were did at a party. There was music. I asked her if she wanted to dance.
There's your opening line right there.
She wouldn't like that I told you. She said no first off.
But really?
Yeah.
So So basically, being in a sales role, what was your objection? I mean, that was an objection. How'd you overcome that? And be like, hey, you know.
Well, I gave her some time to think about it, and I asked her again later.
See, man, it's been so long for me. I don't know what I'd do in that scenario. I'd be like, okay, I understand. Why not? What's the one thing holding you back from dancing with me right now? Right? So you asked her to get dance again?
Yeah, I asked her to, you know, there's plenty of other people.
I'm
going to
pop down the creepy music here. So here we go. I always do that whenever I talk about people meeting.
But yeah, I gave her some time. There was other people dancing. I asked her again a little later and, you know, she said yes that time. I'm like, okay.
So what was about that particular time that made her want to say yes?
You
have no idea. He's like, I don't care. I married her, man. It's cool.
I didn't ask those questions. I just took it and ran with it.
Did you ever ask her why? Well, why'd you say no to me first? What's up with that?
No, I don't know. I don't know what.
I don't
she
know
said
if I want to know. So how? So the courtship. Like
you don't ask how the hot dog is built.
Right. How long did you date and everything until you got engaged and married?
We dated for 2 years. So we met in, I think it was October of 2016.
Oh wow! Okay, yeah, not too long ago.
So dated for 2 years. We were engaged for about a year. And got married just before COVID started, September of 19. We got married.
Okay. Because I remember I met her, I want to say it was, I think it was a Zoom.
Probably.
Yeah.
So she's heavily involved in BNI.
Yeah. She's a director, regional director, right?
I don't think she's a regional anymore. She does the director consulting.
Right.
So she gets to visit all of the different BNIs and help them build a better chapter.
Nice. Yeah. Well, she ought to come out and visit ours when we do the in-person again. Be good to see her.
She's been to ours in the Zoom meeting.
Yeah.
I think it was maybe my first or second meeting. She had that was her schedule was she was in our group. But yeah, she would love to come be in-person. Shoot, we all would.
So you are looking into from engineering, you start looking into insurance due to speaking to who?
So BNI, in her BNI group, there's a good friend of ours. His name's Hunter, and Hunter is in health insurance. And that was my first toe in the water with insurance. I worked in health insurance, and it was a great educational first job.
Right.
Health insurance is a tough game. It's a much tougher game than home and auto insurance because. I mean, shoot, everyone hates health insurance. They hate dealing with it. They hate talking about it. And when
eye roll.
And if you're an insurance agent that sells health insurance, they kind of hate you for just kind of being a part of it, which was a big reason why I left. Not that it's a bad insurance job. It's just I kind of got tired of being treated like garbage by so many people all the time.
Yeah.
You know, everyone says be kind to your server at the table. Well, you know, maybe, you know.
Isn't that funny? Whenever you see posts like that, you know, well, these servers, they don't make that much. And I'm thinking, well, neither do car salespeople. Mm-mm. I mean, so should you tip them too, or?
I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, these guys bust their butt. Well, nobody's holding the gun to the waiter's head either.
No.
You can do other things.
I think you can find a reason to tip just about every profession.
What was it Dwight said in The Office? He says, I don't tip people on things that I can do myself. He says, but I did, tip the doctor that removed my gallbladder. I can't do that myself. Or something like that, or kidney stones, whatever. So it was pretty funny.
I guess I can't do that one. You get a tip.
I'll tip you because I can actually do it. But it's, with tipping, it's funny because you go into a Starbucks, they got the tip card. Dude, I'm paying you to make my drink. That's part of the $5 charge that you're charging me. I got to tip you on top of that. What's up with that?
At what point do we say enough is enough for tipping?
Well, I mean, but the thing is that if you make the argument we're making right now,
sure,
and oddly enough, because we're in a we, it's all about I'm okay and you're not okay, which is a cultural attitude. Look around you.
Sure.
If you actually say something like that, you get chastised. Oh, well, wait a minute. Awful. Why am I tipping you? I mean, this is, tip your waitress. Don't leave 20. Well,
take care of them.
Yeah, take care of them. They can... You can flip stuff on Saturday and flip it on eBay and make $30,000-$40,000 extra a year if you really want to make a good living.
I was a server at one point, and I mean, I certainly appreciated tips because that's the only way I paid rent.
Oh yeah,
a lot of people don't see that. Well, especially in the restaurant industry, because that's the one I know.
Right.
Every server out there, they're making $2 an hour.
Mm-hmm. But they've chosen to do that.
Absolutely. Right. They've chosen to do that because at the end of the day, at a decent restaurant, at $2.13 an hour plus tips, you're going to make way more than $7.15 an hour at McDonald's down the road.
Right.
Or $7.25, whatever.
Yeah, because, you can really turn that into something. And there are guys out there that are professional waiters and servers that, go to these bigger restaurants that have a higher clientele that turn it into an art.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And they're making... probably 40, 50, 60 bucks a table in tip alone.
There is a server at Oak Steakhouse here in downtown Nashville that owns a home in Brentwood. Brentwood.
Yeah.
Well, I guess if you're not familiar, if you're watching the podcast and you're not familiar with Brentwood, it is one of the nicer parts of town. And I can't afford to live in Brentwood.
Depends on what he bought, I guess.
Well, yeah, fair enough. Right. But yeah, he's got a house, not a condo, a house in Brentwood. And his career is he's a server at this high level steakhouse.
Yeah, I mean, look, when I sold cars, sometimes in order to make money, we got a certain amount of pay per month, but you didn't want to rely on that, and certainly the dealership didn't want you to rely on that because they want you to sell cars.
Sure.
And the commission off the cars were the pay plans vary. This one was kind of it was interesting to say the least. I won't go into it, but the idea was to get 10 to 15. I worked at Mercedes-Benz in Cool Springs. 10 to 15 units a month was the goal.
That was your sales goal.
Yeah, that was my personal goal. Mm-hmm. That was where I could really feed my family well. But sometimes some of those deals would take you 15 hours.
Sure. Oh yeah.
And people don't realize that, they look at like what you're talking about with health insurance. You might as well, it's better to become a car salesman at that point.
Probably.
Instead of health insurance.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's a tough game to be in. And there's some people that are really good at it. They've just got a really thick skin.
So you get into, we'll hit the jingle here. What's your problem? I can only surmise and assume what your problem is going to be. So what is your problem? I think I may know.
What's my problem?
Yeah.
My problem is I'm not selling enough.
You're not selling enough. But you have a marketing brain.
Sure.
Right? How do you make it? I would assume that is, how do I apply my creative flair and talents to what I'm doing in a very commoditized business? It can be done.
It can be done.
It can be done. Is that a problem? I mean, obviously not selling enough is, what does that stem from? People not knowing you enough, or?
I think a big part of getting your name out there in insurance, that's one of the bigger problems because people need to be able to find you.
Right.
Right. So, right. You can find me. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook. It's Trust Liam, @TrustLiam. Because if you, and it's about building trust.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, I need you to trust me to protect your home, your car, your whatever it is. Because that's what insurance is. I'm here to sell you protection.
But do people, are they mindful of that notion of insurance when something happens? Like for me, the insurance company I'm with, I've been trying to get my ID cards.
Mm-hmm.
I called the person, I don't know, about a month ago. Still have yet to hear back. That's important to me. Just get back to me.
Yeah. It's bad service.
Right?
I think most people look at insurance as a necessary evil.
Right.
They don't, because most people, I think, are a little bit more, and I guess this is my own personal opinion, but I think most people are a little bit more positive minded. So they're not really looking at, you know, I'm preparing for the worst. It's like, well, okay, I have to do this, right? If you want to buy a home, you have to buy homeowners insurance. The mortgage, you know, the lender, the mortgage company is going to make you, they won't let you close on your home.
Yeah, because they really own it.
They really own it.
Yeah.
If you want to drive a car around the city, you have to have auto insurance, right?
Full coverage.
It's a necessary evil.
With a loan.
Full coverage with a loan. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I want to build trust. I want to make sure that people know what they're buying, that it's not necessarily, it's not this necessary evil. It's, I mean, we're building a shield around you.
Yeah. How do you build trust? How have you been doing that?
I think my biggest way I build trust is through education.
Mm-hmm.
Because if people can talk to me and know that I know what I'm talking about, that I'm going to be able to put them with a policy that is thorough and doesn't have gaps in it, that when that bad thing does happen, you know, I think people more, they trust their agent more than they trust the insurance company, because the insurance company is just this ambiguous company in the background. But
you're the one who matters.
I'm the one who matters, right? And so if I'm the expert, they can trust me because I'm the one that's putting this policy together for them.
But for you, is that go far enough to get people's attention? You know, I mean, putting it out there, one of the B&I presentations that really kind of made me go, oh, and it was by a good friend of mine, Brian Bussolo, who's in the Franklin chapter. He got up and did his 8-minute presentation, and it was all about umbrella insurance.
Sure.
And he did a great job of explaining it, made it very compelling, very interesting. And I was like, oh my gosh, sure, that sounds good. Sign me up.
Sure.
You know? But like you're saying, it's a matter of education. But in order to get that message to be salient, where people actually start listening to you and connecting with you on that level, what has to come before that, do you think?
So marketing brain, right?
Right.
The best marketing in the world is word of mouth marketing.
Right.
You can build trust eventually by having your name in the field long enough where like, oh, well, they've been here forever. They must know what they're doing. But right. If you haven't been in the field forever and you need that trust built, you need someone to vouch for you.
Right.
And shoot, that's what B&I is about, right? You have a group of people who use you or, you know, have experienced your work and can say, hey, so-and-so, you're my client. You need to go talk to this person. And instantly there's a small amount of trust built because someone they already trust is vouching for you.
Oh, yeah. Ambassador.
Ambassador.
Yeah. Flaming ambassadors.
So you've got word of mouth marketing, which is the most effective. It's a slow game, but yeah. it's the most effective marketing out there.
I would think between you and Leah that you can do a husband and wife kind of tag team combo approach doing, because I mean a lot of what you do complements what she does.
Sure.
And vice versa.
Sure.
So why not, you know, in the entertainment realm and marketing realm, what I'm trying to get to the point is, how do you begin the conversations? What's the tip of the spear? How do people get to know Liam and Leah a lot better in the realm of that, you know, just putting stuff out there offensively, you know?
Sure.
Like, what are some of your posts look like?
Well,
are you posting every day, first and foremost?
I don't post every day. you can definitely wear people out if you post every day. Of course,
it depends on what you're posting.
It depends on what you're posting. Yeah. Insurance is boring.
Yeah.
For most people.
I mean, Kyle in here over, he sells our Octave product.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been working with him on, you know, creating relationships. And ours is a little bit more of, it's a different product, obviously. It's a lighting product that's full color LED, water resistant, moisture resistant, chemical resistant, good for car washes. So that sector has really picked up on our product and run with it. We've done, I don't know, since mid last year, probably about 70 sales of just systems for Octave in its first year. It's doing fantastic. So we're getting into car wash shows and things of that nature just in that vertical.
Sure.
So we've actually, you know, there's a Facebook page called Talk Car Wash, mm-hmm. right, where all these car wash owners and managers get together and they, you know, shoot the breeze and everything. Us vendors have one day a month opportunity to get in there and put our wares out there and see what we can stir up. And he and I were talking yesterday. I said, what if you were to, I said, you know, part of the sales process is earning people's trust, mm-hmm. getting them to know and like you mm-hmm. so they can trust you. You know, people buy from people they know, like, and trust. Mm-hmm. I said, how do you do that in the car wash industry? I said, we can do it via cold calling. And I told him about my technique about cold calling. I said, I used to use this technique in the car business. I mean, I had a little bit more of a warmed up approach because they might, if they were in for service or something like that, that could be almost a cold call. Because if they had a car in for service, it was 3 or 4 years old, we'd call them up and say, hey, your car is perfect for our certified pre-owned lot. Are you interested in selling it? Mm-hmm. You know, we can get it appraised and give you a hard number, right? That's market competitive and everything. And sometimes they say yes or no, and might say, but it starts a conversation. You never know.
Sure.
So I said with Kyle, I said, without what we're doing, don't you think it would be easier to talk on their level, right? And I said, for you and for us in general to learn more about the industry that they're in, ask questions relevant to their industry that are good. So just out of happenstance the other day, I said, you know, he's like, what's a good time to call these guys, do you think? I said, I don't know. What's their typical downtime look like? Is it evening? Is it mid-afternoon? Do they work on Sundays or Saturdays? I mean, it depends on the life cycle of their business and how long they've been in business with these car washes. Mm-hmm. So I said, ask about their downtime. What do you guys, you know, when do you take downtime? What do you do on your downtime? I said, because typically in those downtimes, you could actually shoot them an email and they might check their email and all of a sudden it gets on their radar mm-hmm. a lot better than it would when they're in the mix of everything.
Timing is everything.
Yeah. And I said, you know, if you start doing that kind of research, but at the same time, it's a good question. He put it out there. The dude, I mean, he got like 35 comments.
Whoa.
Yeah. So okay. That's what I'm saying for an insurance point of view.
What's the downtime?
Not even that. Just what can you ask people? There's a guy here in town because you guys, insurance people, mortgage people, and realtors mm-hmm. are in the same boat.
We're all in the same river.
Right. How do you stand out? How do you decommoditize what you do?
So, well, I guess I haven't solved the riddle of how do I decommoditize insurance because... Yeah.
Put that marketing brain to work,
right? Yeah, I got to put the marketing brain to work.
You're allowed to be creative.
Sure. Oh, yeah. I think a lot of the ways that we have, at least with Goosehead, that we have tried to build relationships is we build relationships with the people who are helping our clients.
Yeah.
So just like you said, people who are mortgage officers or lenders, right? Or realtors or people who are working in a title company.
Yeah.
Right? If you look at the home buying process like a river, you've got a realtor at the top end, and for the most part, it's a realtor, then a lender, then home insurance.
Right.
And then they pass through me to title, and then, you know, then they're homeowners. And so rather than trying to market to individual people and go after individual sales, which insurance, depending on the style of insurance, you know, in a health insurance sale, you can make a lot of money on one sale.
Right.
But with home and auto insurance, just the way the game is structured, you don't make hardly anything on one sale.
Right.
It's a long game. So rather than go after individual sales, we go after the lenders for the most part.
The goose that lays the golden egg.
So yeah. We build relationships with them. A lot of Goosehead systems are designed to make lenders look really good. We make their lives as easy as we can because one of the big things that can hold up a closing is the client didn't get insurance in time.
Oh, wow.
Right. And so my job is to make sure that if a lender gives me someone, one of their clients, and says, hey, I need you to help them with their homeowner's insurance, you know, it's drop everything. Be as fast as possible so that the client has a smooth process, they don't have any delays in closing, and I build relationships with those lenders and make them look good.
What about when they're buying cars? I mean, you have any partnerships with car salespeople? When I was in the business, I tried to get a relationship going with a local insurance guy mm-hmm. Just to start you know, and they're like, well, typically they're not looking for insurance when they're doing a claim. I said, but I always get in front of people that I need their insurance from. Mm-hmm. And somebody needs to be called to transfer the insurance for the new car they're buying.
Sure.
So I could actually feed you business, but how do we feed me, right?
Well, you can't throw a rock and miss an insurance agent. Right. So there's a lot of competition. So a lot of my, you know, I guess I haven't been in this game all that long, but a lot of my attempts to connect with car salesmen or, you know, sales, you know, businesses, they're like, well, what can you offer me?
Yeah.
And I'm not really in a position to say, okay, well, I'm going to send you, I don't know, $25 gift card.
But that's where it starts with the relationship, getting to know people.
You got to get to know people. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, on the, you know, it was actually a guy that I think I was telling you about before we started talking on the podcast, mm-hmm. Joe Easley, who handles our commercial seat at BNI with Country Financial. Mm-hmm. He had an event last week with a gentleman named Steve Beecham. And by the time this podcast is out, Steve Beecham's will be out. So make sure you go check it out. It might be I think it's going to be episode 69 or 70 at this point. Steve Beecham is a mortgage originator in Alpharetta, Georgia.
Okay.
And over time, he just built himself a little village, and he's the mayor. You know, yeah, it's crazy. He really just not a legitimate mayor, but I mean, he puts out stuff that's anything but insurance based or mortgage based.
Okay,
yeah. I mean, there's a guy here in town in Spring Hill, Steve Missall, who's a realtor, and he'll put up little weather updates, you know, little community happenings, comments. Hey, what do you guys think about the new interchange being built at Buckner and Buckner, that kind of stuff. And he just gets engagement going.
Just a social hub.
Just social, man. And then he becomes known.
Gets his name out there.
Exactly. He just kind of gets things out there with, and people just get to know him.
Yeah.
You know, over time.
Yeah.
Do that.
And time is a big thing, right? The longer you're in it,
yeah,
right? The longer your name has been associated with what you do. Mm-hmm. Just that time is a trust builder.
Absolutely. And people have come to know and trust him over time.
Sure.
Because of just, hey, I'm not trying to sell you a house. You know? He's reached out to me and said, hey, you know, are you guys thinking about putting your house in the market? And I said, hey, I appreciate your cold email. It's not cold, but I know you. But you know, there's really, I'm not, you know, we're not there. Where are we going to go? You know, that's been the biggest question. So the biggest impetus for us was, getting a HELOC on the house, and might as well take advantage of the equity in the house because the run on homes here lately has been advantageous, and just kind of make the best out of where we are. Cause it's where are you going to go without, you know, quadrupling your mortgage payment. But with that being said, I mean, you and Leah, there's a songwriter friend of mine. His name is Reggie Ham.
Okay.
And he and his wife do Her and Ham. It's called Ham.
Fun. Yeah.
Every Saturday night, 5 p.m., they both go live.
Okay.
And they just talk about whatever comes up. He's got a blog that's very poignant and everything. He's got a pretty big fan base. Why not do that? I mean, between the two of you guys, why not you just talk about, you're not trying to be experts in your industries because you're still learning. You're still kind of setting the foundations. Talk about the journey.
Yeah. Bring people in.
Yeah.
Let them identify with where you are in the struggle.
Then you could talk about it in the podcast. Ooh. And I don't know why I whispered that.
Recruiting for extra podcasts. adding to your competition.
Adding to my podcast repertoire.
Oh, your podcast repertoire. Yeah,
all the podcasts I produce.
There you go.
But I mean, that's something, just an idea, you know?
That's a great idea.
Yeah. I mean, why not? Is she the same age?
She is a little bit younger than I am.
Okay, so she is, and she's relatively new to her field as well?
No, actually. She's been in her field since she graduated. So she's been in her field for about 5 or 6 years now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that the foundation is laid with what she's doing.
Yes.
And it's all about customer acquisition for her as well.
Absolutely.
But it's all about relationship building.
Sure.
A friend of mine actually does similar. He's in the financial planning field, and I've been telling him for years. I'm like, dude, just, you know, share little nuggets, wisdom. Have you thought about this? You know, what do you think about, you know, Dave Ramsey's approach to wealth building versus Grant Cardone? You know, those kinds of things, you know. And see what happens, you know.
Yeah,
little engaging questions.
I think if you bring people in, I think it's great. I mean, people will, they can identify with where you are. They can identify with your problems. But A, I mean, it puts your face in front. Well, I guess if it's a podcast, they're not putting your face in front of them. This we are, sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, do a Facebook Live. You can take the audio and turn it into a podcast, but start small. You know, start with just do something you're comfortable with. And, you know, Her and Ham do every Saturday at 5, and they'll get about, you know, 40 to 60 people watching them.
Okay.
You know, and they just have a conversation back and forth about stuff. And
how long have they been putting this out?
Well, he's been, you know, he's got a big reputation as a songwriter. He's written several number ones for Christian and pop radio or pop in music industry. And he has a blog. I mean, he's extremely articulate and very well spoken and very well written. And a lot of the subjects he writes about really resonates with a lot of people. He's conservative, but very sensical conservative. He's not polarizing or anything. He makes a lot of sense out of the stuff he talks about.
Okay.
Yeah, he's great. I'll have to introduce you to his stuff when we get off.
Check
it out. I mean, it's Reggie Ham. Look him up. It's two M's. Her and Ham. They're on Saturday nights. But I don't know. Is there something there? You know?
Could be, yeah.
Yeah.
She's much prettier than I am, so people will at least tune in.
No, you're both of you. You're like a Tom Hanks kind of look like, dude.
Oh, well, shoot. Thank you.
Funny that you mentioned him earlier, right?
Tom Hanks?
No, we talked about him in film.
I love
World War II films.
Oh, yeah.
And the other thing that you might want to think about is one thing we've been doing here at Big Dot, Kyle and I challenge each other, is, okay, let's get a post up a day about something.
Okay.
So we're building out a room upstairs for Octave R&D.
Okay.
So I just did a Instagram story on walking up the stairs and
It was Fizza in our BNI was talking all about how Instagram is focusing on reels.
Yeah.
And that kind of got my creative brain going. It's like, okay, maybe I don't have to have this super creative post every single day. Or I think right now I probably get two a week.
Right.
It's, hey, you know, here's a quick 30-second glimpse into the world, into what's going on, and kind of similar to the, not necessarily the podcast idea, but it's a join me where I am at moment with reels and a way to kind of engage people.
I got to look into reels more. I haven't really looked into it all that much. I've been doing a lot of TikTok.
TikTok,
dude. That's where you need to be.
You're the second person that's told me I need to take a look at TikTok. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but part of my brain wants to, you know, give the squinty eyes at TikTok, just because every time someone kind of talks about how much it tracks on your phone in comparison to what anything else tracks, it's like, oh, that seems like a lot.
They get a lot of that attention, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's a whole organic.
I'm choosing to put a phone in my pocket every day.
I know.
So I guess I don't, you know, beggars can't be choosers. If I want the phone, I guess I got to, you know, bite the bullet and take the tracking.
I literally just take the little clips and promos that I put out for this podcast, and I've been putting those up. And some of them, you know, will get 500 views. I've got 600 on one, 115 on the latest one. And some of them, like with Monty Moore, we were talking about the immigrant mindset when it comes to hustle.
Okay.
And he's got several thousand on that particular promo. Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Maybe reels and TikTok. That's the way to go.
Might as well try it. I mean, because TikTok, you're attracting a new, younger audience. And if you can be the insurance guy for that audience as they're getting into buying cars and houses.
Sure.
There's a trick there. Just saying,
my
man.
My experience with TikTok has been very young kids doing dances. Is that not what it is?
It's kind of, there are a lot of people in a diverse backgrounds or in diverse backgrounds, a real large cross section of people, essentially from, you know, people in their 40s and 50s on down to, I mean, 20 somethings.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, it has aged up, and there are a lot of people that, like myself, I'm 45. I look at Facebook as a necessity. We get a lot of business off of Facebook, community-driven type of stuff, making sure that we're putting, you know, if someone's looking for an electrician in Spring Hill or Franklin or Columbia, that we get a comment out there with Big Dot, you know, whether it's electrical or heating and air, that we get, we're getting mentioned, right?
Sure.
And then I DM the person who asked about that particular service and saying, hey, we can help you with that. Let us know. If they get back to us, I go after it and you know, go for it.
Okay.
But I mean, a lot of that is, that's the only extent I use Facebook for. I'll browse through my feed to my detriment.
To my detriment, I agree. I think my Facebook now is, it's, we talked about necessary evils earlier. Facebook to me is more of that necessary evil. It's, I need it for business. And mostly other than that, it's my, it's, you know, it's my generation's version of my yearbook, right? That's how I keep up with the kids I went to high school with or college with. And really that's about it.
Right. So a lot of what you're, the golden goose is a realtor mortgage lender, mm-hmm. right? For you.
Sure.
Events or anything like that, that you could think of that would attract those bees to the hive, you know?
There are always, maybe not for homes necessarily, because I think the best thing for home would be maybe an open house.
Right.
But
I mean, what's
I don't take the food out of the mouth of the realtor, right? Like that's their,
right.
That's where they find business. And so if I start trying to push in on that, that has a potential to hurt them. And that's not what I want to do.
For you, but you know, marketing is all about similar to sales. Sure. Marketing feeds the sales funnel. It's the megaphone that starts the conversation, tip of the spear, if you will.
Right.
What's the biggest problem you can solve for a realtor, for a mortgage lender, for a general consumer? For me, like I was telling you, you heard my biggest problem. When I call you, call me back.
Right.
Get me my ID card. I'm still waiting on my ID cards.
Right? It's awful.
Right. That's not a hard problem to solve.
For realtors, they typically don't ever need a me.
Right. Right?
A realtor will pass their client off to the lender.
Right.
And a lender will need me a little. Right, because their client has to have homeowners insurance, but for the most part, they just kind of tell them, "You have to go find it somewhere. As long as you have it, we don't really care." Right, most lenders don't look that thoroughly into what's the coverage that's protecting their home.
Right,
and so I can help their clients, but they don't necessarily have a need for me. The clients have the need for me, but the best way for me to find those clients is through typically lenders and realtors.
So right,
My strategy has been, how do I make lenders and realtors look really good? How do I make their clients go, oh my gosh, thank you for sending me to Liam?
What's the goal over the next 5 years for you? Is it a number of clients you want or revenue?
I'm sure that it is, right? I don't have a number in mind. A lot of, because it's relationship, I'm trying to be more relationship based than transactional, right? Every new client that I build a relationship with is a little like goal achieved, I guess. But the insurance game has got really high turnover. So I think for me,
turnover for clients or agents?
Turnover for agents.
Yeah.
I think my 5-year goal is, you know, still be here.
Yeah.
Because in 5 years, if you're still here, you're making a nice living. You've got a lot of people that know what you do and trust what you do. And it's a lot less of a grind.
How can you incentivize people that are already in your fold to be flaming ambassadors?
I think the best way to make people those like banner ambassadors is service, is making sure that if they have a problem, when they come to me, I'm there for them. I am quick to respond. I'm the expert in the field that knows, here's how you deal with this situation. Or you know what? I'm the person that recommended, hey, there's this little thing on your policy that I think it's really important to have. And son of a gun, they actually needed it. And you've heard me talk about this in BNI. I think one of my biggest things that I have a gripe with when I see insurance policies from another agent, not necessarily in Goosehead, but just out there, is water backup coverage. And okay, I'm gonna do like a little really zone in on this one specifically, my nerd insurance brain. Water backup coverage is protection for wastewater that's supposed to go away from your house, your toilet, your sump pump, sink, things like that. If something happens and that wastewater comes back up into your home, it is extremely damaging. And you're not going to clean this up with Lysol and a mop, right? You have to get a remediator in there to clean up the water. You probably need to get a mold guy in there to make sure that you don't have mold growing in the subfloor. It's getting on your personal property and things like that. And I can't tell you how many insurance policies people bring me and they don't have any protection for that at all.
And for as little as how much a month for that kind of coverage?
Oh, shoot. I don't know how much it is a month, but it might be $40 or $50 a year.
Yeah.
Depending on the insurance company. So with Goosehead, we are not the insurance company. We are the broker. We're actually the largest broker in Tennessee.
Right.
Right. So when you come to me, I'm shopping your information through nearly 40 different insurance companies. Right. If you came to me with State Farm and you're going to go, you know, you're going to get a quote from your State Farm guy or, you know, whoever it is, they only have their State Farm option, right? I have nearly 40 State Farms to shop through. And so
are the rates all that much different when you do that?
Yes, actually. Really? Yeah. There are, because every insurance company has what they'll call their appetite, right? This is the kind of risk that they really want. There's going to be companies that really want old homes. There are going to be companies that really want new homes. There are some companies that will say, well, you live too far from a fire station. We're not willing to insure your home.
Oh, wow.
And then, but company B will say, ooh, we love that. You know, that's our bread and butter. You know, bring me more of that. And so when you've got nearly 40 options, I'm inevitably going to have 3 to 5 to 10 that are really going to love the kind of risk that you have.
Interesting. Okay, so that's something I've never heard before. I mean, those little nuances of every industry are there, but it's kind of always fun to listen to them. I was thinking in the beginning when you started talking about that was, now that we have a heating and air division for Big Dot, a lot of, you know, we're looking to partner with a lot of home warranty companies.
Sure.
Is there anything you guys offer that helps out with a bum, you know, electrical panel or anything like that, or HVAC system that goes on the fritz?
Sure. I mean, we've got some access to home warranty products that we can help people get into that. You know, if you've got that bum HVAC unit, you're not looking at having to buy the whole thing again on your own. You've got a small policy that's going to help you protect that.
Right.
But there are some things with homeowners insurance that can really help. There's a specific coverage called equipment breakdown, right? And that's very cheap, right? It's going to be less than $100 a year. And
what does that get you in terms of
equipment breakdown is going to be for major mechanical breakdowns on your HVAC unit, your water heater, and it's pretty much all encompassing in the house. If you've got a major appliance in the house and it has, you know, it's got a mechanical breakdown of some level, right? You are going to have, you have a really small deductible because it's an endorsement on the policy. You're not, if you have a $2,000 deductible on your homeowner's insurance policy, you're not gonna have to pay $2,000 for an equipment breakdown claim.
Right.
Right. It's probably gonna be $500. But if that gets you a new HVAC unit.
Yeah, it's 10% of the HVAC unit roughly.
Yeah.
Right there.
And shoot, all of a sudden you're gonna be really glad you spent that $82 a year for that on your policy, because that's such a major headache that you don't have to deal with now.
Why don't you lead with that though? That's my point, is that, you know, here at Big Dot on Friday, we had a situation that came up where one of our sub panels was heating up and our guys were working upstairs, renovating our R&D room, and they started smelling a burning plastic smell. And my business partner, Tim, went in there and looked at it and he goes, oh my gosh, this thing is really starting to heat up. Mm-hmm. So he says, we got to shut everything off. He switched out the panel. We got a brand new panel in there. That's why I mentioned it in our B&I meeting this morning. I'm like, look, I'm looking for hot panels. That's going to be my ask moving forward. Hot panels. I'm even going to do the
spicy music.
That's right.
Yeah.
If you know somebody with a hot panel. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
Okay.
So, I mean, why not lead the conversation with that? You know, because, I mean, anything that starts the conversation that you can specify, that's an interesting little tidbit that you can put out on social media. Hey, did you know?
Right.
That you can cover things like this for as little as $10 a month.
Oh yeah, that's typically where a lot of my social media content comes from.
Little things you don't think about.
Little things you never knew about, right? I don't know how many quotes I've seen from, you know, someone will bring me a quote. Hey, here's what I got. Can you beat it? Right. And I'm going to look at that and say, well, okay. You know, we talked about water backup a second ago. Oh, you don't have any of that. You don't have any of this. You don't have any of that. It's like, okay, yeah, this is cheap, but it's cheap for a reason.
Yeah.
And so a lot of my social media content is education based. It's, you know, water backup. Water backup is my favorite one to talk about because it's so rarely covered and it's probably in the top three most filed claims.
Right.
And it's like, how are so many people just running around with nothing?
But I mean, there's also the partnership aspect of it. When you sell policies like that, you can partner with businesses who are legitimate that can come in and fix the problem.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's a whole bunch of plethora of opportunity out there you can do.
I think, as an agent, I stand out above so many others because I have BNI.
Right.
Because I can tell, you know.
That's a tough seat to get in a chapter, man.
It is a tough seat. Most insurance agents have to go start their own chapter. Yeah. Because there aren't any openings.
Yeah, they get, you know, you get an insurance guy that leaves a BNI chapter. It's like, you know, casting call.
It's there's blood in the water. The sharks are coming.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we get about, you know, 50 guys that visit us over the course of 2 months, or men and women, rather.
Probably, yeah.
But, I mean, anything that starts a conversation that you can help be the expert in that area. I did not know that you can actually offer something like that, because our marketing approach for the heating and air company is, look, it's almost like collision. And even with insurance.
Sure.
Why not start off with a candorous type of approach? You know, in one of the 22 immutable laws of marketing, it's the law of candor.
Mm-hmm.
Start out with a negative so the customer or the prospect gives you a positive.
Yeah.
Look, we get it, man. This is the last thing you want to shop for.
Right.
When your HVAC breaks, man, we get it. This is the last thing you want. The first thing that goes through your mind when your HVAC breaks is, oh, crap.
Yeah.
How much is this going to cost?
Well, every sale, it has, there's going to be two aspects to every sale.
Right.
You're either selling on, people have, they either gain something or it's a fear of losing something.
Right.
And insurance, just by its very nature, is you're protecting against the fear of loss.
Right.
Right. So find that pain point, right? Every sales education out there says, find the pain point, just like what you're talking about.
Solve the problem.
Solve the problem. And a lot of times, I've got to do a lot of, you know, we are in education again.
Yeah.
Did you know that this was a problem? Did you know that you don't have coverage for that? Because a lot of times people will go, oh, I didn't know I could cover that. Just like what you said.
Yeah.
You know,
and there's a thing that we're starting to wrap our heads around. A lot of what I do is content creation and video for Mercedes-Benz of Music City and their sister dealerships throughout the South.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting to combat, you know, similar to what I would imagine you're up against, the corporate conglomerate approach to insurance sales. But in their world, it's corporate conglomerate car sales. You know, Carvana, Vroom,
sure.
All those different services. You can go on a website, look at the car, buy the car, have it delivered to your house, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So they're getting into the mode of combating that, because those marketing dollars being spent by those big corporations are painting the car business here locally like 1970s, 1980s used car salesman.
Sure.
Right? Which, yeah, you know, the car business and the industry earned its reputation, a well-earned reputation.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of dealerships who really understand they can't do that anymore, those are starting to emerge.
Sure.
And they're kind of leading the way in a way, because they do things totally different.
Totally different. They take the salesman out of the process.
In those corporate scenarios.
Sure.
But when you buy like something like a Mercedes, you know, brand new or otherwise,
right,
there are some people that want the experience. You want to go into a dealership. You want to smell and feel the car. You want to drive it. You want to be kind of doted on, right? You
know? Buy a Mercedes.
That's right. You're rewarding yourself.
At Goosehead, they're definitely trying to stay ahead of the curve.
Right.
We see a big part of the market shifting to, you know, people don't want to talk to an insurance agent. They want to do it all online. They want to get their own quotes online.
Not me.
And again, there are several companies out there that will let you plug in your information, get that quote. And so in the insurance world, we call it binding coverage. You know, you've activated that policy. They will let you plug in your information, quote yourself, and bind your own insurance policy. And they have got miles of disclaimers that prevent them from ever having to, you know.
What kind of disclaimers do you guys have? I'm looking at another angle here. I'm just asking questions. Is it as extensive as them, as like a Geico or any of the big conglomerates?
Well, I'm sure.
Making sure that you realize you're giving up this, you're giving up, you know, indemnifying them.
Yeah, they are. If you're going to bind your own insurance and you're not a licensed agent, they have to, you know, it's financially irresponsible if they don't protect their own butts.
Right.
By saying, you know, you did this, right? If you want a more, if you want to make sure that you have a more comprehensive policy, if you want to feel like you know that you're getting a good product, you need to go talk to an agent, right? Yeah. Because obviously if you're not licensed in it, you're not educated in it, how can you possibly know what you're getting? But people like that price and they like the hands-off feel, right? And I'm on the other side where I'm big on education and I want to talk to you. I want to walk you through everything. I want to make sure that you know you've got a good product on your hands. But Goosehead kind of recognized that if you don't play the game, you're going to get lapped.
Yeah.
So actually, funny enough, today, right? Today is what? August the
11th.
The 11th. So yeah. August the 11th, Goosehead is actually launching what's called a client rater. And it lets you go online because, right, Goosehead is all about options. Here in Tennessee, we've got nearly 40 different insurance companies. You can go online to Goosehead. You can plug in a little bit of your information and you can get quotes back. So if you go, anyone who goes online right now and tries to get insurance quotes, you'll find any number of like little websites that will jump you from page to page. Like you'll jump over to this page and you might get a quote over there and then you'll jump over to this page. And every time you jump pages, they're selling your information to another company and insurance agents are going to call you left, right, and center with Goosehead's new, they're calling it the client rater. It lets people plug in their information and you are going to see all of our carriers. And so in the insurance world, an insurance company is a carrier, right? Whether it's Progressive or Allstate or Travelers or Safeco or Openly, all carriers that work with Goosehead, you will get to see this laundry list of, you know what, Travelers is going to cost you this much per year or this much per month. And then here's what Progressive and here's what Safeco is. And you're essentially your own broker all of a sudden.
Right.
But with Goosehead, obviously and rather than let people, you know, sign their own death warrant with buying a bad policy, kind of taking that teeth out and going, okay, you got to go talk to an agent before you can bind this policy. But, you know, it's very hands off at the front end. It lets you go and shop. And if you don't find anything you like, great. You know, you don't have to go talk to an agent to get anything. You at least have a better idea of what's out there. And at nearly 40 carriers, you're not just shopping with just Geico or just, you know, whatever insurance company. You're going to get to see all of them.
What's the meaning behind the name Goosehead?
I couldn't tell you. I think there was, I know at the beginning of Goosehead, it was one of those three-letter acronyms that was, you know, just as generic as all the rest. And they put their heads together, the great marketing team, put their heads together and said, we need something that's a little bit more identifiable and a little bit more friendly towards people. We can't just be, you know, three letter ambiguous nothing. And Goosehead was what came out of that, you know, marketing huddle.
Right. You know, GEICO is a acronym.
I didn't know that.
It's Government Insurance E-something Company.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm not sure what the E stands for. I just found that out the other day.
I didn't know. And I'm in the field and I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That is crazy, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like if you were to reveal that to people that, you know, government insurance, what do you mean government insurance?
Yeah.
It could be a little bit of a competitive edge. But any of those little nuances that you just talked about.
Sure.
The different things that you do, you know, why make a video about me? Like, you know, it never dawned on me to figure out why we call ourselves Goosehead. Let me find, you know, why not?
Sure.
I just do an explanation.
A little quirk that might capture someone's interest and bring them in.
You never know. You know, what makes the company different and all that fun stuff. You know, those little nuances that you can really just dive deep on.
Got to be a better content creator.
But, I mean, it doesn't have to be brain rocket surgery.
Sure.
You know?
You have to beat your head over it.
I said that term in front of my daughter the other day. She thought I made a mistake.
Rocket surgery.
And she's like, you said rocket surgery. I said, it was on purpose. I say rocket surgery because it's brain surgery and rocket science.
Oh, yeah.
So it's rocket surgery.
And she goes, sense?
You didn't do that on purpose. Yes, I did. No, you did. Okay, whatever. That's my 15-year-old sass. So, yeah.
All the sass.
Yeah. But man, how do people find and follow you? What's your handle on Instagram and such?
On Instagram, it is @TrustLiam.
Like Trust Kevin.
Like Trust Kevin, absolutely.
Kevin Michelson.
Kevin Michelson, who is, you know, the big cheese in my office.
Is he?
Yeah.
Where's your office?
My office is on 8th Avenue, just outside of downtown Nashville. So if you know where the new Publix is, right across the street from Hattie B's, you're only about 10 feet from my office. I can see Hattie B's from my window, which probably isn't good.
Trust Liam. I'm writing it down.
It is Trust_Liam.
Trust_Liam.
Yeah. Don't wanna get people lost on the way.
So I'm gonna try and follow you right now. I'm gonna look this up. Let's see. see what your stuff looks like. We'll critique it from there.
Instagram is a newer one for me, so you'll have to forgive the lack of content.
Dude, look into all the other stuff.
I need to be on TikTok, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Reels. Reels on Instagram.
Yeah, try it out. Might as well. And, you know, you and Leah just do a little weekly show.
Yeah, you know? I think that's great.
Yeah. Right on, man. Find them. @trust_Liam.
Mm-hmm.
And is there a website or anything that they can find your information?
You can, if you're interested in getting some free quotes, you can go to trustliam.com.
Nice. Trustliam.com. I'll say that.
No underscores in there. That's just trustliam.com.
And that goes to a landing page that Goosehead gives you?
Goes to a land. Actually, no, it's one I put together, but lets people plug in a little bit of their information and gives me the contact info.
Lead generator.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a lead generator.
Got your socials on there and everything?
Got my socials on there. Nice. All my contact info.
Awesome.
It's the landing page for now. Now, as soon as the, you know, this client raider I've been talking about gets going, there will be a web link for that I'll just be blasting everywhere.
Blasting out there.
And a QR code that goes with it. And because it's unique to me, right? Because each agent gets their own QR code for their marketing. And that will let people, because when they
do an education video on it, how to use it.
Do an education video on how to use a QR code. Yeah, that's great.
Absolutely.
There's tons of people that, well, I mean, gosh, we're recovering COVID, right? So everyone who's been to a restaurant knows how to use a QR code now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you got the Geico's out there leading the way by saying, hey, save 15%.
Sure.
You know, maybe you could play off of that. Be like, hey, when you're saving 15%, what are you losing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Six-word phrases on how you can brand yourself.
Six-word phrases, yeah.
Positioning statements. TrustLiam.com. Maybe you ought to just refer to yourself as TrustLiam. I am Trust Liam. That's right.
I like it.
I like it too. That has a zing.
Yeah.
So there you go. TrustLiam.com. Check them out. And of course, check us out. What'syourproblempodcast.com. Got any ideas of people we should be talking to that got some problems? Or if you've got problems, reach out to us. What'syourproblempodcast.com. Liam, it's been a pleasure. It's been the first time we really sat down and talked.
Yeah, it's been terrific.
And thanks for coming out to the compound, brother.
Absolutely. Pleasure to be here.